Welcome to Groundwire Community Radio News, brought to you by contributors from community radio stations across Canada. This episode of Groundwire was produced at CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg on occupied Anishinaabe Akin, the homeland of the Métis Nation and the historical territory of the Nihéowák and the Nakota. I am your host, Susan Hubert. On today's show,
a young Swedish activist girl was given the key to his city. There's First Nation communities that don't even have drinking water.
You've stolen our futures with your greedy hands and you're selling it for oil money. And you expect all of us to do nothing about it?
Stand in solidarity with them, as well as the Coast Salish Nation.
But first, here are the headlines. Our first headline comes from CKUW in so-called Winnipeg, on occupied Anishinaabe Akin, the homeland of the Métis Nation and the historical territory of the Nihéowák and the Nakota. It concerns a two-year court battle by a Winnipeg activist to challenge the product of Israel labels on wine produced in settlements in the occupied West Bank.
On Friday, September 6th, Canada's Attorney General filed a notice saying it would appeal a Canadian federal court ruling that wines made on occupied Palestinian land should not be labeled a product of Israel. The July 29th ruling determined that such labels were false, misleading, and deceptive, thereby restricting the ability of Canadians to express their political views on Middle East politics through their consumer choices. Winnipeg-based activist David Kattenberg applied for the judicial review after having complained to the Canadian Food Inspection Agency about settlement wine discovered on a Canadian liquor store shelf being labeled product of Israel. Kattenberg believes the federal government's defense of Israel's mislabeling of its settlement wines has implications for its commitment to the rule of international law.
Canada doesn't accept the annexation of Golan Heights, but Canada is happy to accept Golan Heights wines on Canadian store shelves, extend favorable tariff treatment to Golan Heights wines, and defend the right of Israel to label Golan Heights wines product of Israel. It's hypocritical, it's duplicitous, and it's illegal. Because it constitutes, you know, aid and support for the commission of crimes that are considered war crimes.
Kattenberg expects the appeal will go forward sometime in early 2020. He's optimistic the case will survive this appeal, though the federal court could still appeal it to the Supreme Court. From Winnipeg on occupied Anishinaabe Akin, the homeland of the Métis Nation and historical territory of the Nihéowák and the Nakota, this is CKUW's Michael Welch for Groundwire.
Our next headline comes to us from CKUT 90.3 FM, broadcasting on so-called Montreal, the traditional and unceded territory of the Ganegahaga, one of the founding nations of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy.
The Egyptian Canadians Coalition for Democracy and the Egyptian Home Organization gathered on Sunday, September 29th, in solidarity with the masses protesting President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi in cities across Egypt. Members of the Egyptian community in Montreal echoed calls for freedom and democracy in the city's downtown Phillips Square.
Good morning. My name is Ihab Lotayef. I'm a member of the board of the Egyptian Canadian Coalition for Democracy. We're standing here today in support of the uprising of the Egyptian people. It is an uprising that reminds us of the 25th of January, 2011. When the Egyptian people broke the fear barrier and came out to the streets, despite the odds that were stacked against them. Today, again, the Egyptian people are breaking the fear barrier. The current regime in Egypt has shown levels of oppression, violence, and dictatorship that have never been seen before in Egypt. We stand here to support them. We, as Canadians, have to support them. We call on our government to stand strong against dictatorship, to speak up against the human rights abuses, to speak up against the suffering and corruption that is happening, and to have nothing to do with it, and to have no dealings with such a government that is flourishing on the blood and pain of its own people.
That's it for the headlines. We'll be right back.
I'm gonna love you until I don't, or I still do.
I'll hold it until it's through. Sirens calling, you're not hearing what I'm trying to tell you. Lies are better, lies are louder than the blaring truth. Blaring.
You are listening to Groundwire Community Radio News, available online at www.groundwirenews.ca. You just heard Blaring by Ray Spoon from their recent album, Mental Health. Now it's time for our feature stories. The week of September 20 to September 27 saw over 6 million people around the world rise up and demand action on the climate emergency. The actions were inspired by Swedish teenager Greta Thunberg, who began withdrawing from attending school as her way of expressing her intense concern with how leaders were not adequately addressing the climate change reality as the emergency it is. The major climate strikes took place on September 27th in cities across Canada. On this week's Groundwire broadcast, we highlight audio from three Canadian centres as captured by community radio stations across the country. We start with the following audio from CKUT 90.3 FM, broadcasting on so-called Montreal, the traditional and unceded territory of the Ganegahaga, one of the founding nations of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy.
September 27th saw the Montreal mobilization of the global climate strike. An estimated 500,000 people participated in the march, which began at noon at the Sir George Etienne Cartier Monument in Mount Royal Park. CKUT spoke to individuals in the queer bloc, one amongst several local grassroots contingents striking. Montreal Anti-Fascist, Convergence Lutte Anticapitaliste, and the IWW were also mobilized as an anti-racist and anti-capitalist contingent.
You're holding up a sign that says climate justice is migrant justice. Can you explain what your sign talks about?
It kind of touches on two things. First being that pollution and waste management is pushed to the global south disproportionately. And then the second part of that is that global climate change, rising oceans affect the global south disproportionately as well. So we are choking out these developing nations with our waste, and then we're also choking them out with the eventual environmental collapse that's inevitably part of that. Ultimately, this capitalist mentality that connects nature as a product that can be used and destroyed at such an expedited rate is inherently a part of an imperialist colonialist idea. We need to collapse the connected systems of colonialism, of imperialism, of capitalist production and capitalism in general.
Migration issues connect to climate change, people who are being forced out of Central America and ending up in detention centers. It's talking about how food prices are going to go up, so people who are on low incomes are going to pay more. People who already can't pay for their hydro are going to have higher hydro bills in the winter as it gets colder and not going to be able to stay inside as it gets hotter in the summers. So it's about bringing those things together in a history of queer solidarity organizing and on stolen land. So as part of all of our events, we're fundraising for Indigenous land defenders.
I think there's a long history of radical queers organizing for issues that don't necessarily just affect sexual and identity-based politics. I think it's important here that this march is being led by Indigenous youth, although the Canadian and Quebecois media has been really shitty in terms of letting people know how that has been organized. I might just also say that one of the big placards here is Perverts Against Pipelines, which is a wink to the miners' strike in Thatcher-era England that London queers famously supported and then received the support of the striking miners. They had a slogan, pits and perverts, that's it. And so this is a wink to that, the idea that like queers can organize outside of our own interests and show up for communities that are on the front lines.
Several Indigenous youth were also in attendance.
Hello, I'm from Mississippi, Quebec. I live 9 hours away. My name is Drusey Lochap. I'm 20 years old. Save our land is really important to me. Where I'm from, we have the biggest lakes, known as Cree Nation Mississippi Lake. We take really good care of it,
yeah,
and I think we value it.
My name is Jessica Rose Lacroix. I'm 26 years old, and I'm an Algonquin from the Abitibi region in Quebec. I came here with my college, actually. I'm part of a First Nations college here in Quebec called Kiuna. as you can see behind me, they're all here. To have so many people show up, so many Indigenous people showed up as well, leading the front of it, I was so happy to see that. I remember as a youth playing in the woods, swimming without any worries of water contamination. So having to tell my nephews it's not safe to swim here, it's not safe to play outside in the mining areas, you know, it's terrible to see happen.
The march ended by Bonaventure Expressway. Streets over in Victoria Square, a temporary autonomous zone was assembled for protesters looking for an alternative to the media spectacle nearby.
I think the autonomous zone creates another way to relate to each other in those big social movements. We don't have any kind of spokesperson or any kind of authority. We're basically trying to create this space for ourselves and see how it goes, kind of improvise a time and a space. And it just changes relationship to the city, like how we usually use it. It's just for traffic, business. We're like in the business area right now, and for once there's this sort of block party going on, and I think it gives us another imagination of how the world could be. The discourse around the big march was very mainstream and very Canadian in a way, and the politicians took all the space, and Greta kind of had, you know, like her moment, but we haven't heard about, you know, the real difficult issues that are like present in a lot of people's everyday life. In Canada, we should be more aware of how infrastructural projects affect directly native communities. And that has been going on for years, and people have been trying to talk about that in ways that are like more specific and more related to actual territories. So I think that's one way to talk about it without reducing it to an abstract kind of generational thing.
Days after the strike, several Indigenous marchers spoke out about being tokenized and disrespected after being pushed from the front of the march by non-Indigenous attendees eager to see Greta Thunberg. Jennifer Jerome was one of many Indigenous people at the event to voice their experiences.
I think like everybody else, I was excited to be attending a march for climate change. You know, the First Nations were leading the march with Greta Thunberg, and I quickly joined in. It was definitely very uplifting to see the youth delegation walking with Greta. But towards the front, there was a lot of disrespect. There was non-Indigenous students who would try to insist on chanting, but chanting like in a very inappropriate manner, mocking Indigenous peoples. There was no protocol in regards to respecting the boundaries in regards to the First Nations that were leading the march. So a lot of us, we ended up getting pushed. At some point, we were marching together. It was great. But then next thing I know, I was tossed aside, like all the way from the front middle to the sidewalk. I imagine it was because they wanted to get to the front to see Greta. I'll just paraphrase what my friend Izzy posted. Many stopped singing and drumming because we were drowning in a sea of people chanting, "Protect unceded territory." Unaware of the irony of the whole situation, we were so squeezed by people rushing to the front that we couldn't play our drums anyway. You know, the organizers who asked people disrupting Indigenous delegations to stay behind them were subjected to racist and rude remarks such as, "This isn't your land." It's like we don't have a right to take space and make our voices heard in a cause that affects Indigenous lands first and foremost. In Montreal, in Canada, First Nation people, Inuit and Métis people have been talking about climate effects and changes and global warming for a very long time. We were token because, you know, it's unceded Mohawk territory, and I think they just wanted for it to look good. What's disturbing is the fact that a young Swedish activist girl was given the key to the city. There's First Nation communities that don't even have drinking water. And global warming up north in northern Inuit territory, like there's lack of fisheries, which means there's going to be starvation.
The event also saw the forcible arrest and detainment of local climate activist Dexter X for allegedly throwing an egg at Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. Trudeau attended the march despite fence and approving the Trans Mountain pipeline expansion.
The protest in Winnipeg is estimated to have attracted around 15,000 participants to the downtown area. Michael Welch and the CKUW News Collective were on the scene. Here are some of the voices they heard at the site.
I hear the voice of my great-granddaughter.
Sing climate justice now.
Sing climate justice now.
If all my people weren't systematically oppressed and weren't experiencing ongoing genocide, that we wouldn't have to be here today, because we are the protectors of this land. I'm thinking of those on the front lines, holding it down, protecting 80% of the world's biodiversity, same age as you. Except when we speak the truth, face to face with world leaders, we get met with assault rifles and injunctions. You get met with international attention. I'm thinking about where we're standing right now. Has any justice come from these steps? From any of these buildings surrounding us? We're literally on an Indian burial ground. Our sacred sites are targeted across the world, Mauna Kea, the Black Hills. It's to dismantle our ancestral connections, to eradicate our responsibility to this land. But as you can see, I'm still here. We're still here. Forever we will stand.
You've stolen our futures with your greedy hands and you're selling it for oil money. And you expect all of us to do nothing about it and go to school and study for a non-existent future? That is disgusting. I can't believe you would be this selfish. Making up excuses, putting down fake problem solvers to combat the threat, and calling us teenagers delusional and brainwashed. So dear politicians of the world, listen to me when I say this. We may just be teenagers and children, but you are just adults. That's not right. You are just monsters. And this is our story. And just like the many others in those fairy tale books, we will defeat you, and we will take back what is rightfully ours.
So your presentation went terrible. All wrong dongles, sweat stains and stare.
I think it's a shame that our premier, Brian Pallister, who wrote me a letter saying that he wants to do some action to save the environment, was fighting the carbon tax. I think Greta Thunberg... a piece of her mind, just like she did at the UN summit. You know, if someone was against the speech because of me, that would never, that would be okay. But if someone was against the speech because they don't care about climate change, that would never, ever, ever be okay. That is how important the environment is. Now we need to tell the government and polluting industries what we want. What do we want? Climate action. When do we want it?
Now.
What do we want?
Climate action.
When do we want it?
Now.
It's the only world we've got.
There is also a significant turnout at the Vancouver demonstration. The following audio comes to us from University of British Columbia-based CITR, 101.9 FM, on the unceded traditional Coast Salish territory of the Hankaminam-speaking Musqueam peoples.
I'm here today to September 27th, in the midst of the protest march for the environment and climate change. Right now we're on the Cammy Bridge, surrounded by thousands of people. I look behind me and I look in front and I just see just crowds and crowds of people with signs out supporting, chanting. Most of the people out here are young, high school kids. There's also a lot of millennial young adults out here in support with their own signs. It's really an optimistic thing to see these many people out in force supporting their planet and hopeful of their future.
My name is Brandon Gosnell.
And why are you here today?
I'm here to stand with the students, stand in solidarity with them, as well as the Coast Salish nations here that are trying to defend the land against the Trans Mountain expansion. Essentially what the many nations along the Trans Mountain right-of-way have been saying, they haven't been properly consulted, and when they say no, they're not accepting any money, they're not going to take any compromises, they want a definite no, but they haven't been able to assert their rights and say no to the project. And that's why they're in the court right now, and that's why we're here on the streets and the front lines while they do that in the court.
Awesome. And what flag are you wearing today?
I have the flag of the Haida Nation on my left side. That's my mother's nation. And on my right side, I have the flag of the Nisga Nation on my dad's side. I primarily identify as Haida because in our culture, we go with the matriarchal way. We don't follow the Western culture where you follow your father's last name and their lineage. So I identify as from the Haida Nation. Normal people might seem like it's all going well and it's all going according to plan, but to a more trained eye, we can see that some of the work they're doing might be illegal. They might have permits, but they might not have the correct ones. And we never know when something might happen. Like recently there's been signs of potentially contaminated soil. We don't know what that might be. It could be oil, it could be something else. But we have been documenting it as it happens. And hopefully once we get more people to identify what's going on and take a look at it, we can pressure them through the Environment Ministry or National Energy Board or any other authorities.
Do you mind describing your sign?
My sign says, we stand for Mother Earth.
The turnout you see now, does that give you hope?
Yes, it does. The turnouts all throughout the world gives me more hope. It's really important that we're all out here. It's just very important, actually. I don't know how many people are here. It feels like it's a lot. It can always be more. So I just hope that this kind of wakes people up and joins the movements that are happening more and more.
And continuing on with the turnout of young people, does that signify anything for you?
It's amazing. It's like they should be in school, but no, like this is way more important. Like you're not going to have a planet to go to school at. So this is where they should be. And there should be more education in that. I think a lot of the adults should be waking up and supporting all the youth. And I don't have children, but I'm here supporting the children of the world because this is their planet. We're leaving this to them.
That report was brought to us by reporters Violet Miles, Teo Esselmore, and Alex Trabulisi of CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, on the unceded traditional Coast Salish territory of the Hankaminam-speaking Musqueam peoples, with editing assistance from Ome Rohamtula of the Groundwire Coordinating Team. You are still listening to Groundwire, community news broadcasting from coast to coast to coast, and available online at www.groundwirenews.ca. Now it's time for our community radio report. CKUW's Michael Welch brings us the following report on efforts by Canadian campus and community radio stations to acquaint voters with factual information on the environment in the lead-up to the October 21st election.
Nearly 50 nonprofit community radio stations have signed up to broadcast public service announcements aimed at bringing factual information about climate change and other environmental issues to the attention of the broader public during the federal election campaign. The National Campus and Community Radio Association partnered with the nonprofit organization Environmental Defense, a leading environmental advocacy organization which supplied the factual information appearing in these 30-second PSAs. The campaign is called Facts Are Free. The PSAs were created by Toronto Community Radio Station and NCRA member Vibe 105.5 FM. Luke Smith is the Learning and Development Officer for the NCRA. He spoke to Groundwire recently about why they undertook this endeavor.
When Elections Canada gave their earlier advice that climate change may be an election issue, and then by extension, political promotions around climate change would be seen as issues-based advertising, and then people would be required to register, et cetera, et cetera. And there was a concern that environmental groups wouldn't be able to get facts about climate change out to the general population. And we believed that Canadians should have access to facts about Canadian environmental change. And that's really what the gist of the project was about, was trying to get these facts out there for free to as many Canadians as we possibly could.
There are five PSAs altogether. Three address the boreal forest, recycling, and clean energy solutions, while two shorter spots are dedicated to how Canada's rate of warming and contributions of greenhouse gases compare with other countries.
Facts are free, so let's get them straight. Canada has the ninth highest greenhouse gas emissions in the world, despite having less population in California. These are the facts. Climate change is real.
I think that one actually really speaks to the role that community radio plays in the communities. It's all about creating a platform, creating a space where there's informed debate, where different perspectives are shared. There was a worry that there'd be a bit of a silencing of discussions around it. And a lot of these stations really jumped at the opportunity to put out well-made, high-quality public service announcements that really speak to facts that are facing Canadians around the change in the environment in this country. So it was very very much fit into the mandates of community radio. There's a number of stations that are in conservative ridings. And it was seen also that these campaigns aren't overly political. They're not necessarily, you know, attacking such and such a politician or such and such an issue, but rather saying, you know, the Canadian temperature has gone up by X amount. I think the UN just had a report out saying the last 5 years are the hottest 5 years on record. So for a large number of our stations out in BC, where these forest fires have been continuing to occur, it really was a match made in heaven for these stations to be able to really demonstrate that as a station they are behind promoting awareness around the changes to the Canadian environment.
The PSAs are intended to run on community radio stations until October 20th, with a blackout period appearing on Election Day on the 21st. Be sure to tune in to your local campus and community radio station to hear these messages.
That was our community radio report. Up next, a short musical break. You just heard Ray Spoon with the song Shame from the album Mental Health. That's it for this edition of Grand Noir, produced at CQW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg, on occupied Anishinaabe Akeem, the homeland of the Métis and the historical territory of the Nahiawak and the Nakota. Headlines this week were written by Galma Hadavan and Michael Welch. We also thank the CQUT News Collective, the CQW News Collective, CITR reporters Violet Miles, Teo Esselmore, and Alex Trabulisi, and Ome Rahmtullah for their contributions. Music this week was from Ray Spoon. I've been your host, Susan Hubert. Tune in again to hear Groundwire on your local community radio station or download at groundwirenews.ca. Thanks for tuning in.